T. Randolph. Thanks for joining me again. Today I'm going to discuss my childhood, which for a lot of us is a very complicated thing, whether it was a good childhood or a bad childhood. I'm going to talk about my life from birth to the age of 18. And throughout that time period, I'm going to address some of the things that make me the person I am today. This journey of mine during this period of my life was very difficult. There were moments where it was filled with extreme terror, anticipation, anxiety, but there were also times where I felt a lot of love during the way from my parents and my family. Today's discussion and my personal revelation, if you will, about who I am and how I came to be who I believe I am today is not an indictment on my parents or my family. I'm not trying to judge them, and in no way am I trying to say to them, I don't love you, because I do love them very much. But what today is about is an expression of who I am today, given the life and times I had as a child with my siblings and my parents. And my hope is for you, the listener, that something I say today will inspire you, encourage you, and give you hope and joy. Because even though there will be parts of this discussion that take us into some very dark places, I want the listener to know that I overcame the darkness, and there is hope, there is joy, and there is love at the end of this journey. So bear with me, if you will, as I walk this journey with you of my childhood. I was born in Arizona. My parents met in college. My mother came from a family with her own mother, who had been married 7 to 8 times over her lifetime. I think at the time that I was born, my mother's mother, my grandmother, was on her 4th or 5th marriage. My grandmother was an alcoholic. She drank quite heavily. And again, this is in Arizona in the 50s, where at that time, I really don't think people felt that her behavior was so outside of the norm for a Western town in that time period. My father came from Philadelphia. I met my mother in college in New Mexico, and they went to Arizona, where my grandparents lived, to settle down for a period of time while they were transitioning from college. My grandmother never really identified who my grandfather was. My mother claimed he was an Indian chief. She would tell me that my grandfather was a chief. There were times where my grandmother would indicate that he was a chief, but we never really understood who he was a chief of, what nation, what Indian, whatever, we didn't know. My father's family were descendants from Italy, and they came to the United States with nothing. And in the early 1900s, they sold apples on a corner in the Philadelphia area to put food on the table. They sold flowers, and they did many other things at that time to provide food and comfort for the family. But that family, too, had a lot of tragedy. The men many times died young from pneumonia or from fever or what have you. And that family, my dad's family, the East Coast family, had its own type of dysfunction. And in some respects, the dysfunction that they had was much more dangerous than the obvious dysfunction that came from my mother's side of the family, which was alcoholism. At the end of the day, both sides of my parents' extended families had their own dysfunction, alcoholism, sexual difficulties and problems, which I will address, drug addiction, pharmaceutical addiction, gambling addiction, all kinds of dysfunctional issues that ultimately led to a lot of tragedy and a lot of pain. I was born in Arizona, and shortly thereafter, my parents moved back to the Philadelphia area. I was the oldest. We had 4 children in the family. I had 2 brothers and 1 sister, and my parents settled into the Philadelphia area. From early memory, probably at 4 or 5 years of age, I realized that my parents communicated by yelling to one another. not in the sense of hollering across the room for something to drink or for food, but seriously yelling and screaming and carrying on at a high decibel. Some of you out there are probably laughing right now thinking, you know what? That's exactly how my parents used to talk to each other. So in my family, I honestly believed until the time I was 18 years of age and I moved away from home, that it was normal for adults in marriage to scream and yell at each other. Not only scream and yell at each other, but to throw things at each other. There was an occasion when I was younger, we would be eating dinner and my father would complain about the food my mother had made. And my mother would take the entire dish full of food and throw it at my father on the table. Dishes crashing, food going everywhere, and then act like she had done nothing wrong and my dad should just accept the fact that his plate was now all over his body. So at that young age, I started to have this idea that this is the way parents would communicate. They'd yell at each other, they'd throw things at each other, and at times they would hit each other. My parents were a very fiery couple. They were passionate about each other, but when they got into arguments, they were as equally passionate about driving home their point. Both of them were intelligent. Both of them had degrees from college, and they knew how to grind the axe to a fine point. And when necessary, they would go in and remove body parts to make their point. And as a child, this is very hard to watch when you see parents doing this to one another. And along the way, I was learning this kind of behavior because it was the only thing that I knew. It was the only thing that I saw. As I got older, my father purchased several restaurants and he started to do fairly well. He was selling liquor and beer and pizza and chicken in the basket. And he was opening these restaurants in various retail shopping centers and malls in the Philadelphia area. And he was doing quite well. At this time, we're now into the born in the late 50s. We're getting into the 60s. And of course, all the things that the 60s represents were coming to the forefront. Free love, free drugs, political unrest, assassinations, riots in the streets, you name it, it's happening in the 60s. And my parents were not immune from this. My father had a brother and a sister who were, quite frankly, hippies. They went to Woodstock. They were dropping acid. In fact, one of my uncles got married on an acid trip. And when he came to the family and told everybody he had married, he said, I was at Woodstock. I got high on acid. I married her. Here she is. That marriage, so that you know, lasted for about 8 months. But that was what going on. The whole idea of doing drugs in my family was normal. I mean, my family at Christmas time, it was, let's smoke pot, let's do whatever drugs available. Even when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, I mean, they were blatant about it. Let's sit at the table and do whatever because we're just having fun. And if it makes us feel good, hey, we're going to do it. My parents never hid the idea that getting high was a bad thing. They didn't think it was a bad thing. They also didn't think getting drunk was a bad thing. To them, it was a good thing and it should be celebrated and we ought to have a good time along the way. You've heard it said before that people many times live to the extreme. And my parents did that. There was an Eagles song. There was a rock band called the Eagles in the 70s. And they had a song entitled The Fast Lane. And my mother used to say to me, your dad and I are living in the fast lane. And I didn't really know what that meant until I got older. And as I got older, I realized, oh my gosh, my mom and dad, they're going crazy. They're doing all these things. I actually believed at a point in time that I was the parent and they were the kids. And the sad part was, as I got older, I realized I was the parent and they were the children. I was the one trying to be the responsible person while they were goofing off and having fun while I was a child. And that did some terrible things to me emotionally and also just in terms of who I was as a person, how I define myself. So here I am, I'm in 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and I'm learning that parents yell at each other and scream at each other, they throw things at each other, and they do drugs and alcohol and have a good time. My father, I mentioned earlier, opened up a couple of restaurants. He was making some money. And my grandfather and a couple of my uncles on the Italian side went to my father and said, you know, you should open up a go-go discotheque. And again, for those who may not know what go-go dancers are, these were people who would basically wear mini skirts or very tight-fitting dresses or clothes, and they'd get on top of a pole or a stand in the bar, and they would dance, and they were go-go dancers, and people would go, and they'd listen to 60s music, get high, drink, whatever, and they'd have a good time. So my father started to do that. Well, that type of bar attracts a certain element. And that element sometimes included people who were criminals, people who would deal drugs in violation of the law. They might be involved in prostitution. They might be involved in gambling. You name it, they did it. And my dad and my mother were part of that particular lifestyle. So as I'm getting older, now I'm getting into my later years of childhood. I'm now 10, 11, 12. And I'm going to the bars because I worked as a busboy, or I would help my father set up the bar. And I'm getting exposed to all of this. And what would happen is women at the bar would come over to me and they'd pinch my face, or they'd kiss me, or they'd grab me and say, oh, you're so cute. You're this, you're that. And they might be drunk. They might be on drugs. It really wasn't a place for a young boy to be. But that's where I was. And my brother was exposed to that as well because we worked there and we were helping my dad. As I got a little older, when I say older, probably about 11 or 12, I came to realize that if I was ever going to make it in the world, I had to do it myself. My father wasn't going to help me. My mother wasn't going to help me. Frankly, no one was going to help me. I had to do it by myself. My father very rarely ever kept a promise he made to me. There were times I'd say to my dad, Dad, I'd like to get this as a gift for my birthday, a gift for Christmas. And my dad would tell me, I'll get it for you. Christmas would come, no gift. Birthday would come, no gift. I'd say to my father, Dad, you promised me this. Don't worry, I'll get it for you. Never happened, never was seen. I'd go to my mother crying, Mom, Dad made this promise to me. Oh, your father, he'll get it for you. Oh, your father. And then my mom and my father would fight about the gift, and then I would feel terrible about bringing it up, so I didn't do it anymore. But I vowed to myself at the age of 12, I was never going to be dependent on my parents for anything. And you know what was so sad? That anything didn't just include money, it included love. I had decided that they had hurt me so badly that I was not even going to look to them for love. And I was only going to be there as long as I had to be there because I decided I needed to get away from them as far as possible. There was a phrase that I developed during this time period, and at times I still use it today. Although I have to say to you, my parents are still alive. They're together. I love them dearly. But I say this, my parents are the two most selfish human beings you will ever meet in your entire life. And that's a true statement. They're better today than they used to be, but they still suffer from that malady. And I feel in some respects, I went through some of what I'm going to discuss with you because I needed to learn the lesson of what this program is all about. And you know what that is? Give to others. If you want to be healthy and you truly want to feel good, give to others. Be available for others and love others. So, okay, I'm 12 years old. I've decided that I can't get love from my parents. I know I'm not getting love from my parents. I know that I have to do it on my own. So what did I start to learn at this age of 12? Well, I found out at the age of 12 that my mother had been having sexual infidelities on my father. When she was drinking, when she was drugging, when she was doing whatever, my mother was not faithful to my dad. My father truly wasn't faithful to my mom either because he was out gambling every single night. I'd come home from school, my mother was drunk. We'd have dinner, my dad wasn't there. I'd get up in the morning, both my parents are passed out. I'd try to get food for lunch, I'd be lucky if I got a dollar for lunch. And that was the same for myself and for my siblings. As I started transition from being the age of 12 into my later years, my early years of teen life, I started to understand some of the reasons why my parents acted the way they did. My mother suffered from mental illness. I didn't know that until I was in my early teens. I was told my mother had a bipolar condition. There were times she'd be extremely depressed, other times extremely amplified. My mother had to go into mental institutions at least two or three times during my childhood. And at that time, they believed in shock treatment. If you ever saw Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where he's getting shock treatment, that's what they did to my mom. And my family would tell me and my siblings, oh, your mother had to go away, or your mother's on vacation. We knew what was going on, but they all lied to us because they didn't want to hurt our feelings. My mother was diagnosed with bipolar condition, and the way they wanted to treat her was with lithium. Lithium is probably one of the most toxic chemicals known to man. But for some reason, the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors felt, let's give her lithium and basically we'll poison her such that she can't do anything else but act as if she's poisoned. My mother, when she was on the lithium, wasn't much better than when she was off of it. There were times where I would come home from high school and my mother be laying on the ground, passed out, with all kinds of pills laying on the floor. There'd be spaghetti sauce cooking on the stove, and there'd be pasta and sauce all over the floor. It was a horrible thing as a child. You know, I'm in high school, I come home from football practice, my mom's on the floor, she's passed out. All my siblings are out of the house because nobody wanted to be home because it was insane. And my dad's not around because he's gambling. There was one time when I was in the middle of high school, I came home, my mother's laying on the ground, there's sleeping pills, all kinds of stuff. I had to take her to the hospital, I didn't even have a driver's license. I drove her to the hospital, we got to the hospital, and I saved my mother from what was an apparent suicide attempt. I will tell you, do you know what it feels like when the doctors and the nurses are looking at you in your face as a young person and basically saying to you, I feel so sorry for you. I feel for you because of what you're going through. But they don't use those words. They just stare at you. It doesn't feel very good. And then my dad. My father was a gambler. He's a classic type of person that you see in the movies. If you've ever seen the movie Goodfellas, that's my dad. I went to see that movie one time when I was in college with my wife, who was then my girlfriend. And when we left that movie, we had to go to a bar and we had to drink ourselves into sedation because the movie impacted me so severely. When I was in junior high, my dad got arrested for bookmaking in Philadelphia, and he was on the front page of the local newspaper with a full article about how he was arrested. Well, that day, I was in wrestling, and the coach of the wrestling team pulled out the newspaper, showed it to the whole team, and made me do workouts. I am not making this up. Made me do workouts for an hour while the team watched because of what my dad did in the newspaper. And many of you are probably thinking, oh my gosh, could that really happen? Well, I'm telling you, it did. Now, of course, today if that happened, it'd be front page news on Yahoo or on the internet, and he'd be being sued for child abuse and all the other things you can imagine. But at that time, this is fully acceptable behavior. And I can tell you, as I indicated earlier, what happens to you as a child when these things happen, the walls go up. And what you say to yourself is, I have to protect myself. I can't be vulnerable. I can't give any emotion to anybody because they're just going to hurt me. And I need to have walls, and I need to do everything I can to protect myself from other human beings because every person that I have trusted has hurt me or abused me. And I know for some of you, when you hear these words, they're going to be hard to hear. But I also want to say this to you, and I said this at the top of this, there's hope and there's joy. And never give up because we can make it together. There are people out there that care about you. There are people out there who want to give to you. There are people out there that do not have an agenda, who simply want to love on you. And my hope through this program is that the people I can bring to talk and in interviews can share the love they have for people and the grace that they have for others with you. So you can understand and realize that even though it's tough, even though life can throw trials and tribulations at you, there is hope and there is joy. So hang in there and never give up because the ending is worth it because you will be victorious. So, okay, back to my story. So, okay, I'm in high school, I'm in junior high, all these things are happening. So what happens with me? Well, at this point in time, I start to interface with other children, of course, because I'm in school and I'm on athletic teams and I even had some jobs. And when I started interacting with these other people, I start to meet other families. And when I meet these other families, what I'm noticing is that those other families don't do life the way my family does life. You go to their home, they sit together quietly, they eat dinner, they support each other, they encourage each other. If they make a promise, they keep it. They show up on time. They don't lie to each other as a way of doing life. They just seem to be doing things differently. And at the time, my dad had me convinced that anybody who told the truth was a square. Anybody who was responsible was a square. Anybody who did things the right way was a square. Why would you do it that way? That's just being stupid. You don't need to do it that way. Do it the easy way and things will be better all around. So I met some girls in high school and I met their parents and I realized, you know, their life is different than mine. It looks different than mine. So when I would show up late for a date and the parents would be upset with me, or I'd bring the girl home late from a date, you know, in my family, being late, that was no big deal. Like, being late, what's the problem? And I didn't realize until then that it was a problem, that people expected me to honor my agreement to bring their daughter home before midnight. Or that if I told this girl I was going to take her to the movies, I really took her to the movies instead of doing like Burger King or something like that, because that was her expectation and she believed that I would honor my promise. So as I developed further along in the high school years, my parents developed worse behavior. My mother's alcoholic condition progressed to the point where it was entirely abusive. She was drunk all the time, hiding liquor in the house. My dad was gambling all the time. My father lost his businesses. He would gamble cars. There were times, I'm not making this up, we would have a brand new Cadillac Eldorado in our driveway and it would be paid for. And my father would go to a poker game. He would bet that Cadillac, and if he lost it, the next day that car was gone. There were times where we had no cars. And when I tell you no cars, I mean no cars, because my dad had gambled them all away. Then there'd be other times where we'd have like 10 cars in the driveway. A very strange way to live life, because you never know, is it feast or famine? Is my dad happy? Is my dad not happy? I'd come home sometimes, he'd be watching football on the TV, and he'd have four or five games on. And my father would tell me, you have to root for these teams because I'm betting on these teams. And if you don't root for these teams, you have to leave the house. And it was weird. You'd come home and you couldn't really root for the team you wanted, because you were guilted, you were shamed into the idea that if I don't root for this team, then you know what? You're a bad boy. You don't support me. You're not in my corner. And you felt shunned and you felt shamed. And again, it adds to the whole idea that how do I need to be? I'm not going to show love. I'm not going to show caring. I'm not going to be a real person, because if I'm real, I'm going to be hurt. So all I'm going to do is fake it. And I'm going to cover it up, and I'm going to do everything I can to have my walls, because I don't want people getting behind my walls. My siblings had a very tough time with a lot of this too. There were times where I would be with my brothers and my sister, and we were crying, and we go out, and we try to fake it, and sometimes you just couldn't fake it. It was just too hard to take. We went out several times for Mother's Day with my mom and dad, and in the middle of dinner in a public restaurant, my mother would yell at my dad, throw a drink at him, throw her food at him, and get up and leave. My mother several times left the restaurant and started walking down the street in front of the restaurant, hitchhiking, and get in a car and drive away with four children and her husband on Mother's Day sitting in the restaurant. That was some of the craziness that went on in my life growing up. So I've talked about events and things that have occurred with my parents along the way, how I dealt with it, or truthfully, how I didn't deal with it. And what did I learn through that experience at that time? Well, number one, I'm not going to love anybody because it just hurts me. Number two, I'm not going to trust anybody because my trust always gets broken. Number three, I'm going to proceed the way I was taught to proceed, which is it's okay to be late. It's okay to lie. It's okay to cheat. It's okay to just pretty much be antisocial. And of course, you must always be about your business, which is to gain the advantage, even if other people are hurt by it. Think about that. I'm 15 years old, and that's my mindset. So how did that mindset change? What was the cause of change? And what was it that helped me to change and why? This show, in great part, is about an answer for all of those questions I just told you about. Through the life that I have lived, there's been so many good people who've come into my life who've loved me unconditionally, accepted me, forgave me, and helped me along my personal journey. And so much of the show for me is about giving back. I have had many men, many women, many friends, my family, my wife, my children give so much to me that I feel an incredible burden and a joyful burden to share what I've learned with all of you. And my hope is that through my own sharing and through the people I have on the show, you can live the life that God intended for you, the life that you truly want to have, and a life that gives you the joy through all circumstances and the healthy way of living your life to benefit yourself and those around you. And so, I want to leave you with this. If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor, and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. And so, I just leave you with that until we have a chance to visit next time.
Thanks for listening to T. Randolph and Friends. Please write to us or check out our website, blog, and conversations at trandolphandfriends.com. We would love to hear your thoughts on topics and guest ideas for future shows. We are Listening to Life.